Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 35 degrees under fair skies. We have calm winds. Out at the airport, they are showing 76% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with a high near 40 and calm winds. Mostly clear overnight, too, with a low around 32, calm winds. And sunny skies for tomorrow, with high near 42, west winds around 5. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska's oldest building is looking at getting a new roof. And it looks like the state legislature is taking a serious stab at fixing the state's pension system. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. SiriusXM says it is laying off 475 employees. That's roughly 8% of its workforce. NPR's Anastasia Siulkas reports the satellite radio and audio streaming company is the latest business to cite economic uncertainty as the reason for downsizing.
SiriusXM made its layoff public in an SEC filing. In a memo to employees, CEO Jennifer Witz cited SiriusXM's need to find, quote, opportunities for greater agility and efficiency, as well as uncertain economic conditions ahead. This makes SiriusXM the latest among many media and tech companies, including NPR, to announce layoffs. Over the past several years, SiriusXM had acquired several other businesses, including the podcast company Stitcher, Pandora, and Conan O'Brien's Team Coco. Anastasia Tsoulkas, NPR News, New York.
The chairman of the Washington, D.C. Council says he's pulling back the capital city's new criminal code from congressional consideration, but it appears the U.S. Senate plans to hold a vote anyway on the GOP-led resolution that would have the city's attempt to ease penalties on certain crimes, such as burglaries and carjackings. The criminal code revision seemed to be on track to becoming the first D.C. law in decades to be completely overturned, and President Biden said he would not block that. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Biden is still committed to D.C. statehood.
Doesn't mean that it stops our support for their statehood. Doesn't mean that the president has changed his mind on that. We still support that and want to see that happen. And we're going to continue to encourage Congress to move in that way.
NPR's Windsor Johnston has more.
D.C. Council Chair Phil Mendelson once again defended the proposal to revise the city's criminal code against Republican-led attempts in Congress to scrap it.
It's not about the criminal code. You know, when there are comments such as that we're decriminalizing a crime that we're not decriminalizing. But if the Republicans want to proceed with a vote, it will be a hollow vote because the bill isn't there.
Lawmakers from both parties have characterized the bill as soft on crime. President Biden last week said he would not veto a resolution that would void the updates, adding that he doesn't support some of the changes that the D.C. Council put forward, such as lowering the maximum penalty for carjacking. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Police in Rochester, New York, are confirming at least one death as a result of a crowd surge during a rap concert in upstate New York. They say large numbers of people pushed toward exits following reports of possible gunfire, but police said today they found no evidence of a shooting. Several people, again, were injured, two of them critically, and a 33-year-old woman was killed. From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Construction plans for the state's oldest building are moving along. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports it's the first step in a bigger plan to preserve a piece of history on Kodiak Island.
Members of Kodiak's Historic Preservation Commission unanimously approved a service agreement for a new roof design for the Russian-American magazine at a meeting on Tuesday. It now goes to Kodiak City Council for review and a vote. The building is more than 200 years old and now houses the Kodiak History Museum right outside Kodiak's downtown core. Sarah Harrington is the executive director of the Kodiak History Museum.
It's a $20,000 collective cost. $10,000 would be needed from the city. $10,000 is being contributed by the State Historic Preservation Office. And this is the last remaining piece in order to get those designs moving forward.
A survey completed in March of last year found leaks and areas of rot in the building's roof. The service agreement approved by the commission encompasses only the initial plans and drawings for the roof's replacement. Harrington says the design will be more comprehensive than just replacing the existing cedar shingles.
They're going to make some stability and safety improvements to the roof design itself, including, which is the priority for from our view as tenants in the building, is returning a slight pitch of the porch area.
The porch has a flat roof and the space is unusable because of leaks. There currently is no estimate for how much the overall roof replacement project will cost. The roof is one of many structural issues with the building. The survey completed last year also found other areas of rot, leaking windows and old pipes, among other problems. The magazine was built in the early 1800s and is a National Historic Landmark. It was one of the few buildings in Kodiak still standing after the 1912 Novarupta volcanic eruption and the earthquake and tsunami that hit Alaska in 1964. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Alaska's state agencies are in the midst of an employment crisis, struggling to incentivize new hires and retain the staff they have. A report last year estimated one in five state jobs is vacant. A new bill introduced in the state Senate last week aims to address the shortage with a revamped retirement system. The current defined contribution or 401k style plan leaves employees to manage their own retirement account investments. Analysts say under this system, employees shoulder all the risk and don't end up saving enough.
Employees were not earning enough through the defined contribution plan to actually retire with enough savings to support themselves.
That's Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican who introduced the new bill. Her bill would return public employees to a pension plan that would guarantee set payments upon retirement. There won't be a financial evaluation of how much the new bill costs the state until it's gone through the committee process. But Geisel says she expects it will be, quote, very affordable.
If we can more effectively retain our state employees, keep those skilled people in their jobs, it makes a huge cost savings for the state. And not only that, it serves the Alaska public much better.
One of the ways lawmakers are proposing to keep the new pension system lean is by not offering health benefits upon retirement. Jeff Casper, business manager for the Alaska Public Employees Association, says that's not ideal, but returning to a pension plan has been the union's number one goal.
Anything's probably better than what state employees have right now.
Geisel's bill has to move through two committees before it gets to the Senate floor. An Alaska group is coordinating an international meeting at the end of this month to discuss policies for the far north. Arctic Encounter will host 13 countries for 3 days at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage.
Making sure Alaska is represented at the table of Arctic nations is one of the goals of Arctic Encounter.
Is to get Fairbanks and Anchorage recognized as international hubs of Arctic policy to the level of Oslo and Tromso and Reykjavik.
Brittany Smart works in the mayor's office at the Fairbanks North Star Borough. She gave a presentation on the conference to the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce last week on Arctic Encounter and its three-day symposium in Anchorage at the end of March. Sadie Blancaflor, program director with Arctic Encounter, says the giant conference is their flagship event.
This is the United States' largest North American gathering that's focused on the Arctic. Alaska is the United States' claim to the Arctic, and Arctic Encounter is what brings folks from around the world to Alaska to see what Alaska has to offer to the global stage as it relates to discussions and policy and business in the global north.
Blancaflor says Arctic Encounter just hosted an event in October with the government of Greenland in Iceland. Arctic Encounter is not a legislative body, but Smart says the borough is starting to pay a lot more attention to the international gatherings like the symposium, where reps from 13 Arctic nations are signed up, and other nations are starting to see Alaska as an important player. Smart pointed out the yet-to-be-confirmed U.S. ambassador to the Arctic, Mike Sfraga, is from Fairbanks. Borough Mayor Bryce Ward will be on a panel at the symposium. Smart says there are many international bodies focusing on the Arctic, and Alaska representatives need to be heard.
There's a lot of investment and a lot of big idea projects that are moving forward, and they are going to either happen to us or with us. And this is a huge opportunity to make sure that what does happen is mutually beneficial.
Blancaflor says in addition to plenary sessions and breakout sessions from nonprofit groups and businesses, they are also making it a cultural gathering.
So we're featuring Alaska Native art. We're having a Far North fashion show featuring different Alaska Native designers. And we are also featuring Byron Nikolai, who is an incredible Yupik musician.
Yes, there will be senators and ambassadors at the Dena'ina Center. But Blancaflor says you don't have to be a specialist to attend the symposium.
We welcome community members. We actually just launched a rural elders and youth scholarship program. We recognize that oftentimes the cost to attend conferences can be inaccessible, and we want to make sure that community voices are there and are able to take the information back into their communities. So if anyone is interested in applying for that scholarship, it's on our website as well.
That website is arcticencounter.com. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Skagway and the Yukon have a long common history when it comes to mining. After a decades-long lease to a private entity, the ore transfer dock will come under the Skagway municipality's control once again. The facilities will be upgraded over the coming year, and the Yukon government is negotiating with the municipality to secure access for Yukon mining companies to Skagway's deepwater port. As KHNS's Alain de Preminil reports, the Skagway Borough Assembly voted on Thursday to approve the general terms for an export cooperation agreement with the Yukon government.
Yukon government representatives are offering Skagway a deal. They'd contribute over $17 million to Skagway's marine services platform at the ore dock. The Skagway municipality would retain ownership of the facilities. In return, the municipality would give preferential treatment to some mining companies. Companies in good standing with the municipality and the Yukon government would benefit from a 25% discount for 20 years on all fees imposed by the municipality. In addition, Skagway would make 4 acres on the ore dock available for mining companies, plus an additional 2 acres somewhere else in the municipality. This land would mostly be used for storing ore containers. Skagway Borough Manager Brad Ryan has negotiated the agreement for the municipality.
I have probably negotiated with the Yukon Group for hours about the 35 years. And I've gotten comfortable with it for a number of reasons. One is the relationship. I think that's very, very important to us. Two, if I do the math, it totals about $13 million for 4 acres. And the fact that we will be able to yield the revenue off of the dock if stuff is coming across it and if ore is going out.
Mayor Andrew Cremata said he'd also like to move forward. He spoke of the need for a diversified economy.
Taking this land and setting it aside for use by industry with an agreement where an entity is making an investment that exceeds the money we could get for it, and ensuring at the same time that we will have a diversified economy in the face of what appears to be unrestrained cruise ship growth over the next 35 years, is very appealing to me.
Kermata said the cruise industry has become dominant in Skagway. He says the agreement with the Yukon government ensures land remains available for ore export.
My fear is that that real estate could quickly be absorbed by entities that are in the cruise ship industry or who benefit from the cruise industry. It could be more shops, more restaurants that are open for 6 months out of the year and closed in the winter.
The agreement would last 35 years, with a review after 30 years. There would be no possibility for the municipality to unilaterally terminate the agreement. That was a sticking point for Skagway Assembly member Sam Bass, who spoke against the proposal.
The idea that we're going to cede control of the majority of the Ore Peninsula to Yukon Mines is unacceptable. We cannot develop the peninsula as we determine. Instead, we must ensure that Yukon Mines have an area to lay down containers and stockpile their ore for the next 35 years. What if we want to do something different? We can't. It has to be ore storage until 2058. We can't ignore that. Now, again, I am in favor of ore transshipment from Skagway, but the deal has to be good for Skagway.
Bass said he wants to consider possible liabilities and take more time to consider a deal.
Let's also not forget that we are carrying the burden of stockpiling this ore on our waterfront and in our backyard. Now, I'm not opposed to that risk, and the containerized system is supposed to be the most environmentally sound method available, but there's still risk.
Bass argued that it would be a better deal for Skagway to come up with the funds for developing the marine services platform and retain control of its waterfront. He said, alternatively, a clause could be included whereas Skagway could terminate the agreement by buying back the Yukon government's investment. After debate, the Assembly voted to amend the proposal. They voted to guarantee between 3 and 4 acres to be made available to the exporting entities on the Ore Peninsula, instead of a firm 4. They also voted to have a review of the agreement after 15 years, instead of the original 20. The Assembly then voted 5-1 to approve the general terms of the agreement. Assembly member Sam Bass was the sole no vote. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremenil.
The 2023 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race is off and running. This is coverage of the Iditarod on Alaska Public Media. I'm Casey Grove. 33 Iditarod mushers hit the 1,000-mile trail this weekend with a ceremonial start in Anchorage on Saturday and the official race start in Willow on Sunday. It's the smallest field in the race's 50-year history, but as Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports, there was still plenty of excitement on the trail.
Temperatures dropped below 0 degrees in downtown Anchorage as mushers prepared for the ceremonial start. It was especially cold if you came from Australia 5 weeks ago, like musher Christian Turner did. He was wearing a heavy-duty jacket down to his ankles.
Yeah, so this is a non-stop dogwear muumuu, and it's basically an Arctic anorak. You can put anything, all your normal clothes underneath it, and then the anorak goes to the top and keeps everything warm and everything compressed. It's sort of like wearing a sleeping bag.
Despite the cold temps, Turner and plenty of other mushers were excited for the untimed 11-mile parade along city streets and trails. Around the corner from Turner, Riley Dyke sipped coffee.
Yeah, well, you have like a week of hurry up and wait and hurry up and wait, and now we actually get to run dogs a little bit, and it makes it feel a little bit more real, not like we're just kind of in limbo. So
the staging area along 4th Avenue was quieter than usual for an Iditarod ceremonial start. With about half the number of teams as average, the sounds of yipping dogs was more subdued. Still, the event drew thousands of people out along the trail to watch. Rookie Bridget Watkins says she's glad extroverted mushers like herself can feed off the crowd's energy one last time before embarking on the real race.
Just like I feed off the fans' enthusiasm, the dogs feed off my enthusiasm, so it's just like this big giant ball of excitement everywhere, and that's what the start's about.
Out on course, mushers kept the enthusiasm high, stopping to chat with fans or even eat hot dogs. Jason Mackey had another way of interacting with the crowd. Before starting, he reaches into his sled bag to show off his goodie bags.
I don't know, there's probably 20 pounds of filled booties with candy. So
he tosses those signed neon booties to kids along the trail. Fans also pass out drinks to mushers who sometimes aren't ready for a cocktail at 10 in the morning. Veteran Aaron Peck says he makes some exceptions, though.
I only accept
IPA, good quality beer. Don't hand me that light beer stuff, you know. And hot dogs, I'm hungry, so if anyone's got a hot dog, you know, that's good. But
once the fanfare's all over, though, mushers turn to what they really came for, the official start in Willow. Temperatures had climbed to double digits by the time the 33 teams took off at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
3, 2, 1.
There he goes. The first musher on Iditarod 51, Jesse Holmes.
Rookie Judd Stevenson says the Iditarod is a culmination of a lifetime dream. The Idaho musher says he's only trying to have little thoughts as he prepares to hit the trail for the first time.
Little thoughts is just getting down the trail and stopping in about 50 miles and leaving it at that and not thinking about 1,000, because that would crush my soul if I thought about that too long.
For some dogs, too, there was some nervous anticipation. Marty, one of reigning champion Brent Sass's dogs, was barking excitedly before the start. The young dog had some big shoes to fill as the son of one of Sass's main leaders last year, who retired this year.
Young, energetic, and has no idea what he's getting himself into right now. So, but he's ready to go. It's pretty fun. He's the youngest guy in the team.
For Sass, going into his 8th Iditarod, the pressure of getting his second win wasn't high on his mind.
I feel like I'm the calmest I've ever been for any Iditarod start.
He says after all the fanfare, he's ready for his Iditarod vacation. Reporting in Anchorage and with help from Liz Ruskin in Willow, I'm Lex Trinan.
As of this morning, the front-running Iditarod teams are into and out of Finger Lake. Brent Sass led into that checkpoint a little over 120 miles into the race, but according to the Iditarod's GPS tracker, his team was taking a break outside the checkpoint and was passed by Nick Petit of Big Lake and Ryan Reddington of Knick. At last check, Petit led by a little less than 10 miles. We'll have more race coverage throughout the day at alaskapublic.org, including photos, more stories, and sled dog profiles. You can also sign up for our special Iditarod newsletter and find our Iditapod podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Casey Grove, and this is Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
New commitments from 3 airlines to end family seating fees. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The Transportation Department says American, Alaska, and Frontier have agreed to commit in writing to no-fee family seating for parents with children 13 years and younger. In writing is key, as it means regulators can enforce those commitments. Industry group Airlines for America says most large carriers don't charge for family seating, though that has not been written into customer service plans. European authorities say raids in Germany and Ukraine have disrupted an international cybercrime gang responsible for ransomware attacks on hundreds of companies and institutions, including in the U.S., where victims paid out nearly $43 million in ransom. 3 suspects, all Russian citizens, remain at large. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 6th day of March, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:50. It will set again at 6:52. That will give us 11 hours and 2 minutes of daylight. A gain of 4 minutes and 59 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 48 degrees set in 1944, and a record low was minus 6 set in 1971. Currently here in Kodiak, it's jumped all the way up to 38 degrees under fair skies. It's a beautiful day. Out at the airport, they have east winds at 3 miles per hour, 68% humidity, 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for mostly sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 40 and calm winds. Mostly clear overnight tonight with a low around 32 with calm winds. And sunny skies tomorrow too with a high near 42, calm winds turning to the west to about 5 tomorrow afternoon, just enough to make it pleasant. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side in about an hour at 1:21 this afternoon. That will be an 8.7-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 7:51 this evening and be minus 4/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 1:56, just about 2 p.m. That will be a 14-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 8:26 p.m. of minus 8/10. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. South winds to 15 knots, seas to 9 feet for today and tonight. For tomorrow, southwest 20 and seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 2 feet. Going to 3 feet tonight, still variable 10 tonight. For tomorrow, southwest 15 and seas to 4 feet. The Board of Education will be participating in a board workshop for the FY budget presentation, FY24 budget presentation, for schools and district-wide programs tonight, starting at 5 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. That will be followed more or less immediately by the Board of Education work session. That's expected to go off at about 6:30 p.m. in the same room. The meeting agendas and packets for these are available on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. If you need more information, contact the Secretary of the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. The Kodiak City Council work session that was to have been held tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. has been rescheduled for Thursday at 6 p.m. It will still be held in the Kodiak Public Library, and in this case, it will be more or less immediately followed by the Kodiak City Council regular meeting. Both of these meetings packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website, where you can also find the web streaming link, and you are also invited to tune in right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials, or if you have any questions, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Here are some upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. Tomorrow, Tuesday, March 7th, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow. On Wednesday, the Bayview Road Service Area Board will be having its budget public hearing at the Bayside Fire Station at 6:30 p.m. Also on Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And a week from Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. The Borough Assembly will be having its next regular meeting Thursday, March 16th in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All of these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And remember, assembly meetings are live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel, and if you subscribe, they'll send you live stream notifications. Here's a note for elementary school families. Mark your calendars for March 8th and 9th. They will be early release days for all Kodiak Island Borough School District elementary schools, which is grades kindergarten through 5th. They will be dismissed at 1:50 p.m. both days, both the 8th and the 9th, to make way for scheduled family teacher conferences. Call your school office if you have any questions. But again, that's the 8th and 9th, and the kids could be getting out at 1:50 p.m. Alaska Sea Grant is hosting a Business of Fishing workshop in Kodiak on March 15th. That's going on from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Fisherman's Hall. The workshop will cover business planning, tax strategies, and risk management. The event is free, and lunch will be provided, but advance registration is required. Visit alaskaseagrant.org/events to register, or contact Julie at 907-250-9512 for more information.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.